Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Senator John Thune says one of the main reasons he wanted to join the Senate Finance Committee was for the opportunity to reform and modernize the tax code, which hasn't seen comprehensive revisions since President Ronald Reagan and a Democratic Congress passed the bipartisan 1986 Tax Reform Act. The Senate recently passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The package is now being reconciled with the House tax plan. The goal is to have comprehensive tax legislation on President Trump's desk by Christmas. Senator John Thune joins us on the phone now from Washington. Senator Thune, thanks so much for being here today.
Nice to be with you. Thanks, Lori.
Take us behind the scenes and tell us what's happening right now.
Okay.
Well, it's a bigger question, huh?
Yeah, that's right. No, I'm hoping that we can close out the conference with the House as quickly as possible. You know, as you mentioned, the House and the Senate have each passed their version of tax reform. And so what the legislative process now calls for is a conference committee. There are some differences between the two bills, but they're not insurmountable in a way that should make this too difficult. But we have, you know, different because of, you know, the bodies and their composition, they reflect sometimes different priorities. And so now we have to try and reconcile the differences between the two bills, and hopefully the conference will report out a conference report that will come back to the floor of the Senate and to the floor of the House, have to be voted on again before it can be sent to the president for his signature. So that is where we are in the legislative process. I feel pretty good that we're going to hopefully wrap this up fairly quickly. I've talked to a number of my colleagues in the House already about that and about the differences, and trying to figure out where we can bridge that gap and try and get a bill that actually does something that's meaningful for middle-income families in this country and allows them to keep more of what they earn.
Senator Thune, in 1986, it's my understanding it took 2 years to sort of hash out the bipartisan plan. It took the Senate 3 weeks to pass their package, the House 2 weeks. What's the strategy or reasoning behind going this fast, and what are the risks of going as quickly as you are?
Well, I think that you know, the time frames that you've listed are a little bit misleading. I actually was here in 1986. I was a staffer in the Senate, believe it or not, and I wasn't. My boss, Jim Abner, was not on the Senate Finance Committee, but I was what we call the tax LA in the office, the tax legislative assistant. So I worked a lot on that particular legislation when it passed, and it did take a little while to work its way through the legislative process. But you have to remember, too, that we've been working on this for a long time. I got on the Senate Finance Committee in 2011, and since 2011, we've had over 70 hearings on tax reform. In 2015, Chairman Hatch appointed 5 working groups. I chaired one of those working groups to make recommendations about how to reform the tax code. Each group made reports, much of which is included in the legislation that we have in front of us. Very, very comprehensive, deep dive look at each aspect of the tax code, and then a series of recommendations came from that. When we brought this to the committee to mark it up, we were in that markup for a better part of 3 days, 23 hours, I think, we spent marking up the bill. We voted on 63 Democrat amendments to the bill, so there's been plenty of due process and plenty of transparency and plenty of what we call regular order around here to get the bill to where it is today. And so I feel like this has been a very carefully, well thought out, well vetted piece of legislation that we've got in front of us. And is it perfect? No. But the legislative process, in my experience, very rarely yields something that's a perfect outcome. But I do think it represents the best of the thinking, you know, the very best ideas that we've had around here now for the past several years.
Senator Thune, you and I have discussed the Farm Bill extensively on this program. Yesterday we welcomed Doug Somke, who's president of the South Dakota Farmers Union, and he said farmers who are talking to him are expressing concern about the 2018 Farm Bill and how the deficit that this current tax reform plan would lay out for the future, the increase in the deficit, could impact negotiations on that Farm Bill and impact subsidies and provisions there. What's your response to that for South Dakota farmers?
Well, you know, I don't see that happening, Lori. I think that we were going to have, you know, every time we have a farm bill debate, it's a tough, there's a battle over the budget. You know, how much money is going to be allocated, how it's going to get divided between which title in each of the, you know, the 13 titles in the farm bill, how's the money going to be distributed and all that. And we have that every farm bill. I think, you know, with respect to this particular tax bill, what we assume is going to happen, and I think it's a very fair assumption, reasonable assumption, is that we're going to generate a little bit of additional economic growth. And if we did generate a little bit of additional economic growth, it more than pays for itself. But what we're looking here, just so you know, people understand, this is a $5.5 trillion tax cut over a 10-year period, $4 trillion of which is paid for with offsets, or what we call basically base broadeners. They're killing and doing away with preferences and loopholes and exclusions and exemptions in the code today in exchange for lower rates. So $4 trillion of that. The balance, the $1.5 trillion, it is assumed that we use what we call a current policy baseline, which is probably more inside baseball than your listeners want to have. But that's about $0.5 trillion. So it's about $1 trillion, really, that we have to come up with in terms of additional growth. Well, to get that $1 trillion, you only have to increase growth in the economy by 3 to 4 tenths of 1% over the course of the next decade. And, of course, the assumption that's being used by the Joint Committee on Taxation and the Congressional Budget Office is that the growth rate for the next decade is going to be 1.8%. Well, we believe it's going to be much better than that. In fact, the last two quarters, we've grown at 3.1 and 3.3. So even if we got up to, over that time period, 2.1, 2.2% growth, it covers the cost of this tax bill. And that was really one of the reasons for doing this. And we've got to get the economy growing at a faster rate. 1.5 to 2% growth just isn't good enough in this country. It's not the new normal. It shouldn't be. And if we can get growth back up to that 3 to 3.5% rate, we'll have way more revenue coming into the government than certainly any amount that's represented in this tax bill would include.
And in that vein, people have been asking me, you know, they have an understanding that January 1st might be when changes, you know, to their individual tax, you know, when they go to file their taxes this year, they might see changes. But they're asking, you know, this idea of projected economic growth, what is a reasonable expectation to see the results of that in South Dakota? What does that look like for the average South Dakotan? Some of the promises, other than just, you know, hey, my tax bill is a little bit smaller. When do you see job growth? When do you see wage increase? What's reasonable?
Well, I think that, you know, first off, that most South Dakotans will see, starting in January, if this actually gets signed into law and gets implemented, it'll probably take a few months for the IRS to do the paperwork and adjust all the payroll withholding. But within a few months, you'll start seeing bigger paychecks. I mean, there'll be government will be taking less out for income tax. And, you know, the example that we've used, and we used it a lot, I was talking on the floor last week, is that if you have a family of four, typical family of four, with a combined annual income of $73,000, your tax cut is going to be $2,200 from what you are paying today under current law. And that represents about a 60% reduction over what that family of four is paying today. If you're a single head of household making $41,000 a year with one child, you're going to see a 75% reduction in your tax liability. So what I think most South Dakotans will see first is an increase in their take-home pay, from their work, simply because the tax cuts will start to take effect next year. With regard to the economy, which is the, you know, again, one of the main objectives of this was to get the economy growing at a faster rate, we're already starting to see the economy pick up. Like I said, the last two quarters have been 3.3%, 3.1%, and that's a significant improvement over what we've seen for pretty much the past decade, which is 1.5 to 2. But to have the tax cut pay for itself, or in order to make up for the foregone revenue in the tax cut bill, we would only need to see about 2.2% average annual growth. So how quickly can we achieve the kind of growth that we think we need and the kind that would lead to the higher wages that you mentioned? You know, I think when the economy starts picking up and companies are expanding, growing their operations, that creates competition for labor. Competition for labor raises the price for labor, and that means wages start going up. I don't think that happens overnight, but I think you're already starting to see a little bit of that uptick in the economy, and I think this tax bill will help accelerate that. So I'm hoping sometime, you know, in this next year and beyond, that we'll see significant growth in the economy, and that translates, like I said, into bigger paychecks and higher wages for American workers and for
some
workers.
You took some heat on social media for recently saying on Fox News that the media is sort of cheering for failure in tax reform. I wonder if you want an opportunity to clarify those comments about the media in context for us.
Well, I think it was a question that was asked by the media, and I don't pay any attention to the stuff that gets said on social media, so I haven't seen the criticism, I guess, but I do think that it's important that when people cover this, that they cover it accurately. And I've seen some media reporting, frankly, that I think is not accurate, and that which buys arguments that are being made by the people who are critical of this bill. And there's certainly plenty of room to debate on a policy level the relative benefits of this, and or if you think that certain income groups benefit versus other income groups, but it needs to be based around the facts, and I don't think people need to jump to conclusions that aren't based on facts or use the people to sort of editorialize or add their opinions in the course of the discussion if they're supposed to be just reporting on what the bill actually does. And I've seen a lot of that in the coverage of this tax debate. And frankly, maybe it's because I'm close enough to it that I've seen most of what's happening. I've seen how the bill's been put together. I've seen the distributional impacts, who benefits from it, and so I just want to make the conversation, the discussion about the facts, and I hope that the media will do that too in the way that they cover tax reform, because it is a consequential and big issue for the American people, and certainly for people all across South Dakota, many of whom live paycheck to paycheck, and frankly, I think deserve a bigger paycheck, and I think tax reform will get them that.
And finally, before I let you go, we're seeing news that Senator Al Franken is going to make an announcement on Thursday. Many Democrats calling for him to resign. You said that Roy Moore should step aside from the race in Alabama, and President Trump and the RNC have, reiterated their support for Roy Moore. Have you changed your thoughts on and what should happen with Roy Moore? Do you still believe he should step aside?
I do. Yeah, I think that's best for everybody. I just think that, you've got as many people who I think have been very credible in the charges that they've made, what they presented, that, this is an issue that I don't think is going to go away. And on a very practical level, I think if Roy Moore wins, and he very well could, it looks like next week when he gets here and gets sworn in, he's going to be immediately under an ethics cloud. I suspect there'll be an ethics investigation, and they will probably bring some of these accusers in, and they will testify, and I assume the ethics committee at some point will make some recommendations. But I just think that it's in everybody's best interest, when you have a set of circumstances like this, and we've seen a number of examples now, unfortunately, not only in politics and where we are, but in media and business and every place else, that folks need to own up to it, be held accountable, and if necessary, if you need to give up the position, do the right thing. Clearly we need to see a sea change in the way that we deal with these issues going forward, and I think that the American people have an expectation that that we're gonna, like Congress, just like entertainment, just like business, needs to do the right thing, and particularly by the women who have been wronged in many of these circumstances.
Senator John Thune, I'm making you late for your next meeting. I appreciate your patience and your time. Thanks so much.
Always good being with you. Thanks, Lori.